Okay, Rabotai, we're starting on Daf Vav Amud Beis. We are again dedicating these shiurim for Shalema for Hendel Bas Rivka and Oira Bas Gala. Okay, we'll start again on Daf Vav Amud Beis. Well, you get it from here. Two, four, six, 8 lines up from the bottom. At the end of the line, towards the end of the line, we have Amar Abi Avod. Last word on the line is Hikriv. 8 lines up from the bottom. Last word on the line is Hikriv. Back up three words. Amar Abi Avod. Okay. Vav Amud Beis, 8 lines up from the bottom. Last word on the line is Hikriv. Everybody okay? Amar Abi Avod. We're really in middle. What's that? Everybody okay? Okay, we're really in the middle of a discussion. We're discussing the schar of a person who participates in a wedding celebration and contributes to the simcha. Person is mesameach chosen v'kala. So we've already seen a pretty strong statement of Chazal that the mamish equated the chasana with mamad har Sinai. It's a revelation of the Shechina. Chazal put it in the same, equated it with mamad har Sinai. We began discussing that the other night. And basically what we said was that actually, yes, by a person marrying his wife, they're actually creating a new revelation of the Shekhinah. Now, we'll see that illustrated in a couple of ways in the next point, couple of points that the Gemara will make. Rabbi Abba Omar, ki ilu hikriv toida. A person is mesameach chosen v'kala, it's as though he bought a toida offering. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, this is the continuation of the Pasuk that said Kol Sosa Vikol Simcha Kol Chosa Vikol Kala Kol Oimim Ha'odu LaHashem Tzvokos. Continuation is Mevim Toida Beis Hashem. They bring a Toida to the house of Hashem. What's the significance of this? We'll see. First we'll finish the statement. Rav Nachman by Yitzchok Omar, keilu bona achas michurvay Yerushalayim. It's as though he built one of the ruins of Yerushalayim. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, this is again continuation of that same pasuk that began with Kol Sosa Mikol Simcha. Ki oshi veshvu saoretz kevarishayna. I will bring back the inhabitants of the land as it was originally. Omar Hashem, Hashem says. So here, what we've seen added last time was two additional elements of the simcha of a chasana. First of all, it's as though one is bringing a toida, and second of all, it's as though one is rebuilding one of the ruins of Yerushalayim. So the truth is that this really is just elaboration on the previous point, that we said that it's mamish like a gilui shechina, a revelation of the shechina like that of Matan Torah. So these two last points are really illustrating that. So first of all, again, we're going to draw on the Maharal to put this into perspective. The Maharal says, what happens by a toida? What does a person bring a toida offering for? A person was in danger. He was saved. And therefore he brings a toida offering. Now, what's going on there actually? The danger was actually a means of demonstrating Hashem's care for you and Hashem's salvation. Hashem's greatness. Right? It's not like you are in danger, you were saved, so now you're back to square one. Now you have a deeper appreciation of who Hashem is and what He's doing for you. So actually the danger, which seems to be conflicting with, so to speak, conflicting with Hashem's presence, Hashem's power, was actually a means of bringing out Hashem's power. It's the danger it's the feeling of danger that brings out the good feeling afterwards. And therefore the Maharal says, you bring a toida. What does a toida involve? Chometz and matzah. Opposites. Part of the point of the toida is to show how often Hashem will use conflicting things in order to bring out His oneness. Danger seems to be going against, right, threatening the stability that you should feel with Hashem. Hashem will use danger to bring out a person's bitachon, in order to teach a person bitachon. Yes, you were in danger, but you were saved. It's often like that. It's a concept called, you can mind and call it Yediyas HaFachim Achat. Sometimes you need to really appreciate the opposite in order to appreciate the first. If you want to say something is black, you put it against the white background, you appreciate it better. Right? It's often like that. You like a certain color scheme. When you're decorating a room, don't just have it that solid color. You like red. Don't just have it red. You have to put a few of the colors that most contrast with red in order to bring out the red. That's how Hashem works. A lot of times you have things that seem to be opposite of what Hashem's agenda is, really just in order to bring out even more clearly Hashem's agenda, whether it's salvation, etc. Therefore the Maharal says, this is a general principle in understanding Hashem's oneness, that even though we have all kinds of opposite forces in the world, they all really are just coming together in harmony to bring out Hashem's greatness. And that's why Davka the Toida we bring with Chometz and Matzah, showing how all opposites are really not opposites. It's harmony. What's harmony? You have a bunch of instruments playing on the same note. That's not harmony. It's just added noise. Harmony is when you have conflicting sounds that blend in perfectly together. So Davka, Taida, is the place to show how in what seems to be opposing forces, when you see how they merge together to actually just bring out Hashem's greatness, that's the Taida. Oh, so Yitzchak understands where we're heading. Chasana. What's going on by a chasana? What's going on by a chasana? This is what's going on by a chasana. Bring man and woman together. At first glance, we would think that that's the worst shidduch to make. Man and woman is the least compatible. But Hashem says no. Bring the opposites together. You'll see how through work, bring the two together, that will ultimately constitute the biggest gilui of Hashem's oneness. Opposites working together is one of the most classic forms of bringing out Hashem's oneness. And that's why Davka, yes, man and wife is considered such a valuable gilui, such a valuable revelation of Hashem's oneness. There's another element of it also, Davka and man and wife. You know that there are other religions who consider the whole concept of man and wife to be impure. Right? A holy person doesn't marry. Right? But again, what's that saying? That's saying that there are elements of the Bria, there are elements of the creation, that are meant to be kept outside the realm. It's kind of like outside the realm of Kedusha. That's why by us, Davka, man and wife, is considered one of the greatest levels of Kedusha that there is. Man and wife uniting, that activity by the Goyim represents the most base of activities. By us, that represents one of the greatest levels of Kedusha that there is. That's why it's considered such a sublime mitzvah. By the way, that's really the depth behind the whole concept of Shalom Bayis, of man and wife getting together. People talk about Chesed. Chesed is very important in a man and wife relationship, but that's not the essence of what it is. The whole point was just in order to do chesed, so okay, become volunteer head of an orphanage, and that's that. Why do you have to marry Davka? The whole point of man and wife, the value in marriage, man and wife, is that concept of achdus. You take two things that seem to be so far apart from each other, but they join together, they mamish merge into one. Davka man and wife have the property of doing that. Man, as close as they get, as close of a friend as you get, never reaches to the level of oneness like a man and wife can get after investing efforts. It's not immediate. Initially, it's an artificial attraction. An artificial attraction that draws any guy to any girl. Right? marry. Artificial attraction wears off after a short time. Doesn't take long. The bubble bursts. But really, that's there just in order to form a base for the real work, to create what we call real love, not just hormones, not just natural reactions. Real love, that's something that's built through work, and it continues intensifying and deepening through more and more and more years of work. So that's what we're saying. A person, part of the concept of Simchas Kotzav Kal is Tzilu Hikriv Toida. It's like bringing a Toida. By bringing these opposites together, we're bringing out the Achdus, the greatness of Hashem, the Achdus of Hashem. By, so more than that, by showing that what by the Goyim is the most remote thing from Kedusha, by us, that is Dafka, the greatest level of Kedusha, because we're showing how, yes, the realm of Kedusha envelops everything. Okay. Why do the Goyim have a concept of marriage? What are you asking?
I mean, like, to say that something that you don't consider marriage is sacred.
In Christianity, they figure that since this concept of a man and wife uniting, the truth is that it is turned into one of the most base activities when it's done wrong. It is just lust and base activity when it's done wrong. You have to have the right approach in order to turn it into Kedusha. It could be one of the most animalistic activities that there are. But that's exactly what we're showing. We're showing that no, we can take even that and turn it simply into Kedusha. The difference is, it's a subtle difference, but the difference is what the focus is. If the focus is just indulging yourself, enjoying yourself, it's just a base activity. There are two people, neither one really has a mind on the other, each one just wants to enjoy, and they need the other one in order to enjoy. That's base. What turns it into Kedusha is when each one is focused on the other, in the sense of mamish bonding together with each other and forming an achdus. By the way, there's a lot of depth to that. Maharal says elsewhere, not here in this context, Maharal says elsewhere, very, very, very fundamental Maharal, and just understanding the whole concept, that there's a Gemara that counts the things that men have in common with animals, and that they have in common with Malachim. And it's very interesting that Maharal notes that the Gemara does not count this activity of man and his wife joining. Maharal says, why isn't that counted as one of the things that man has in common with animals? He said that really, on the deeper level, that's not what's going on. It's a completely different activity. With animals, it's, and with human animals, it's two separate beings getting together just because each one needs the other in order to get what it needs. With people, when it's done right, when it's done the way it's meant to be done, it's not what's going on. It's two halves of a whole merging together as one. There's really one being here. Man and wife are meant to reach a level where they're really just one. Mamish one. Just throughout the day, the two parts go in different directions. But in their minds, they're one. Their activities in the home, they're one. And that's most brought out in this activity. They join as one, but it's not two beings, Maharal says. It's mamish just one. That's why he says it's so important. We find someone on Meroyim. So important we know that you're supposed to keep it discreet. You understand? Simply, stay a stick, keep it discreet. It's a lot deeper than that. The Maharal says, really, in the panemius, the inner depth, what's really going on is, it really is all just one. Just anybody, any outsider viewing it sees two bodies, and that messes up the whole thing. Because there aren't really two here. There's only one. To the extent that we find, we'll see much later in the Masechta, that the Amoraim used to chase away flies. They didn't even want flies being nearby. No eyes should perceive what's going on as two. And that includes also that the husband and wife involved should not perceive it as two. Each one is focusing just on bonding with the other one. Mamish forming one neshama. That's the depth of what's going on here. That's achdus, and that's representing the achdus, not just in the sense of getting along nicely with everybody. That's really the depth of that concept too. But achdus in the sense of representing the achdus of the Shechina. Man and wife together represent the Achdus of the Shechina. That's also, by the way, you hear talk about having the right kavanas, about having the right thoughts. That's what it means. The right thoughts means to be as focused on your wife as possible. Sounds strange. Those are the right kavanas. Plus the Rashi in other places says, very interesting. Rashi says, it's discouraged, right, to do this when you're tired. Why? Because Rashi says, then you might just do it in order to appease her, get her off your back, or mamish scary. Rashi says you might do it just for the purpose of being yaitzi in the mitzvah of oina. You hear that? And that's terrible. Person has to be doing it mamish with a enthusiastic involvement. That's why Hashem makes it so pleasurable. But again, the point is, a person can be diverted and just focus on the pleasure and not focus on somebody else here. But the point is, no. The mashal is, sometimes you can go to a restaurant by yourself and dig into a good meal. But when you're meeting your brother, you haven't met him for 10 years, and you go together to the restaurant, what are you doing? Are you having a good pastrami sandwich? Or are you enjoying his company and it's being enhanced with the meal? That's what's really going on there. The point is the uniting. And if that can be done with a lot of pleasure too, that just enhances the experience. But that's the focus. That's what gives it the kedusha. Okay. That's the toida element, bringing the chametz and matzah together that we're celebrating when celebrating a chasm. So here also we see how our mamish bringing out again a revelation of the Shechina through doing this. And the last thing that the Gemara said was, Kilu bana churva achas mechurvas Yerushalayim. It's as though he's building one of the ruins of Yerushalayim. This also should already be obvious based on what we've been discussing. What was Yerushalayim all about? What was the essence of Yerushalayim? The kingship of Hashem being manifest in this world. Meloi chol ha'aretz kvoydeh. The glory of Hashem should be apparent in a real tangible way in this world. With the galus, we lost that. Right? The Yachal looks like there are other forces ruling. Whether it's foreign kingdoms or whatever. Now, when a man and woman found a home, what they're doing now is they're, or should be doing, this is how you have to view the Jewish home. What they should be doing now is forming a pocket in this world where they are restoring the glory of Hashem. You build your home in a way, and in your home the glory of Hashem pervades. This is the approach you and your wife take in building the home. This should be the atmosphere that fills your home. Enthusiasm about Hashem, enthusiasm about His mitzvahs. You turn your home into a unit where the glory of Hashem has already been restored. You're mamish rebuilding one of the ruins of Yerushalayim. You have to realize that. You have to realize you want to turn your home into a haven of the Shechina. Let the junk of the street stay out in the street. But let your home be on a different level. The Shabbos table. Don't bring all the politics and all the nonsense into the Shabbos table. The Shabbos table, what your son learned this week in school, is the subject. What are you doing? It's all the politics. It's nothing. It's the discuss it. It has about as much significance in the grand scheme of things as the weather. It's just the setting that's going to have certain implications on the way this world runs. But what's really going on? What's the real story of this world? The real story of this world is each person who's internalizing and deepening his spiritual appreciation, his relationship with Hashem. That's what you should be generating. That's what you should be nurturing in your home. Don't waste the time with your kids. Don't waste the time around the table with all of the superficial stuff on the outside. Lock that out. Let your home really just be a haven of Hashem's Hashchina. Talk about these things. Talk about a relationship with Hashem. Talk about ruchnius at your table with your children. That should mamish be the atmosphere pervading your home. Then yes, a home is one of the churvas of Yerushalayim being rebuilt. It's a a pocket, yes. Outside, the glory of Hashem is still not apparent. But in this bubble, the glory of Hashem pervades. Okay. The Omar Rabbi Chelvoy, Omar Abun, Kol Adam Sheyesh Bo Yiras Shomayim, any person who has Yiras Shomayim, Devarav Nishmoy, his words will be heard, meaning he's going to have an influence, he's going to make an impact. Shenema, as it says in the Pasuk, Soif Dobar HaKol Nishmo. At the end of the day, this is how Shlaima signs off Koheles, right? There's a famous last pasuk of Koheles. Soif Dobar, at the end of the day, after all his analysis of all the phenomena of this world, after everything has been heard and analyzed, Etzer Elikim Yirah, just fear God. So what's he saying? Hakol Nishma. So the Chazal are darshaning it, not as in after everything's been heard out, but rather everything will be heard if you fear Hashem. Now again, fearing Hashem doesn't necessarily, we're not referring to the specific, we just talked about this on Thursday, we're not talking about the specific aspect of fearing punishment. That's not the main element of fearing Hashem. Fearing Hashem primarily means being imbued with an awareness of Hashem, with a constant awareness and awe of Hashem. Nothing to do necessarily with fear. Awe really is the point. When a person is imbued with an awareness of Hashem, and he's speaking from that, that's where he's coming from, his words will have an impact. He's going to make an impression. The way the Or HaChaim puts it is because it's not just mouth to mouth. You don't depend necessarily on your capabilities of articulation. It's the nefesh talking. It's coming from the Hashem that's in you. So it's nefesh to nefesh. That's going to have an effect on the person you're talking to. Right, there's a famous story of the Chafetz Chaim, right? The very famous story of the Chafetz Chaim, where the Polish government made a decree compromising the yeshivas. They would have to introduce all kinds of curriculum. So a group of the rabbanim wanted to go together to the Minister of Education of the Polish government to discuss it, to try to influence him somehow to take back his decision. So a delegation of rabbanim went with Chafetz Chaim at their head. And Chafetz Chaim was already in his 90s at the time. He was barely able to move. They basically carried him. When they came and they met with this minister, the Chafetz Chaim launched into an impassioned speech in Yiddish, just trying to explain what the Torah means to us and how it has to remain untouched and pure. And he went through his whole impassioned speech, and somebody stood up to translate what he had just said into Polish for the minister. So the minister said, no need, I understood it all. So they said to him, what do you understand? You know Yiddish? He said, no, but this rabbi spoke the language of the heart. I understood, it's fine. That's this Gemara. That's this Gemara. It wasn't mouth to ear, in which case that has to be the right language. It was nefesh to nefesh. And by the way, sometimes it might seem that that's not so. You see a great person speaking, see people, it just has no impact. But it strikes deeper in. Often you don't see the results right away. Also at the Chafetz Chaim, there was an incident where there was a fellow, completely irreligious Jew, who became a very, very chush of a professor in Russia, in Poland, wherever it was. And one time, he was meeting with some frum client, and they got to talking about Yiddishkeit. So he said, you know, I could be in a much better position than I am today. This guy was one of the top professors, but he said, I could already be big in the Ministry of Education and this and that. You know why I'm not? Because I refuse to renounce my Judaism. Now this one is a person who had absolutely nothing to do with Yiddishkeit anymore. He was a completely self-denied Jew. But to make that official declaration, he wasn't going to do. And Mamish was, it could have opened doors in front of him. And he said he's not going to do that. So he said, why not? Why not? He said that one time when he was in Warsaw, he saw crowds of people going towards the shul. He asked, what's going on? He heard one of the famous rabbanim from far away had come, was giving a drosh in the shul. Then he'd go in and listen. Didn't know who, didn't know why. It was the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim gave one of his long impassioned, the Chafetz Chaim, when he spoke in public, he used to speak for 4 hours at a time. He was a fascinating speaker. He used to hold people's attention. So the night they gave one of his impassioned drushes about Mesirus Nefesh for holding on to your Yiddishkeit. The guy said, I left there not very impressed. Yeah, I know, but Lamaitza, I have a career, I'm getting ahead. Didn't have much of an impact on me. And I continued with my way, except when it reached that point. And he continued, completely not from, nothing Jewish about him. But when he reached that point, he was basically told, look, your mom is reaching the peak of success. Well, we can't allow you to get further without renouncing your Judaism. He said, there the drasha of the Chofetz Chaim caught me. I wasn't going to introduce any more Yiddishkeit into my life. But there the drasha of the Chofetz Chaim caught me. I wasn't going to renounce my Judaism. So even a Jew on that level, nothing to do with Yiddishkeit anymore. That Mesirus Nefesh for Yiddishkeit he had. Wasn't going to renounce his Judaism, even though the Maisa had put a ceiling on how high he was able to grow. That's the idea. Fintali, yeah, the drop of Jew is still there. So that's the point here. Now, my kizek kola adam. Now, once we expounded the beginning of the pasuk, we continue with the end of the pasuk. It says, "Let's halikim yirah, fear God, let's mitzvos of shmar, and observe His mitzvot." Kizek kola adam, because that is all of man. What does that mean? That is all of man. Omar Rabbi Elazar. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kala Hashem says, and what's he saying in Kailas here? Kala Oilam Kuloi Lenivra Ela Bishvil Zeh. The entire world was created in order to produce this person. Meaning, well, let's see the Gemara until the end. We're going to see three similar looking statements with subtle differences. So that's number one. The entire world is created for this person who's a God-fearing man. Now again, when we're talking about God-fearing here, we have to realize we're talking about Yirat Shamayim, which is named as the greatest of virtues. We're not talking about a person who's just scared of Gehenna. That's the lowest level of Yirat Shamayim. Yirat Shamayim in the sense of a person who always walks around with that sensory awareness of Hashem, such that he's in awe at all times. It's not about punishment. It's not that he's scared Hashem is going to bang him over the head. He's just in awe of the fact that he's before Hashem at all times, and that guides every step that he takes. So number one, yes, the whole world was created in order to produce this person. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahane Omer, Shokul Zeh Keneged Kol Olam Kulo. This person is of equal value to all the rest of the world. Put him on one side of the scale, he equals all the rest of the world. Rabbi Shimon ben Azai Omer, Ba'amrila, and others say, Rabbi Shimon ben Zoyma Omer, who's either Rabbi Shimon ben Azai or Shimon ben Zoyma, Kola Olam Kuloi Nainivra Elo Litzeves Lizeh. All the world was created only as company for this person, as the backdrop for this person. So we saw three similar but subtly different points. Each one is making a different point, equally profound. Number one is, the entire world was created for this person, meaning Hashem will sustain a mankind of millions of people in the hope that one of them will become a Yirei Shamayim. It's worth it for Hashem. Hashem will invest a lot of quantity for quality. That's something to note in our generations also. You wonder, what hope is there for our generation? Look how many people are lost. You have to realize Hashem is willing to invest a lot of quantity for that little bit of quality. It says, right, Avraham Avinu. All the dairis, all the generations preceding Avraham Avinu were a worthwhile investment for Hashem. That's where Hashem operates. Hashem was willing to invest all those generations because ultimately an Avraham Avinu was produced. So that's number one, realizing that by developing Yirat Shamayim, you are justifying Hashem's efforts, so to speak, in creating all the millions of people until you came around. Number two is, Kol Olam Kulay Shakul Keneged Zeh. You have to also realize, just in getting the right perspective on what's going on around you, the person who has Yirat Shamayim is Hashem's purpose. That's where the value is. Everybody else doesn't equal him. So like, for example, remember Yonatan Rosenblum, right? I'm sure people have seen his articles, right? Yonatan Rosenblum. So here I don't read his articles on a regular basis, but I remember that after the tsunami, he wrote, so it should be obvious to anybody who's attuned, that Hashem did it in order to wake up the Jewish people. Not his chiddush, very basic fundamental point of Hashkafa, but he wrote it in the paper. So there was a sharp letter to the editor afterwards from some woman, Jewish, from woman, it was a from paper. Writing back, what an insensitive thing that is to say. How could you say that hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives in order to wake us up? It's callous, etc., etc. But we have to say, might have been politically incorrect, but she's wrong and he's right. That's what we're being told in the Gemara here. Yes, all those other thousands of people are just balancing him out. Yes, it's true. Hundreds of thousands of people die for some Jews to enhance their Yirat Shamayim. Yeah, it's worth it. Now it sounds harsh, it's actually not harsh, it's exactly the opposite. That's how those 100,000 Indonesians gained significance, gained meaning. Otherwise, their lives, excuse me for saying this, their lives were meaningless from beginning to end. I'm sorry, the world is only about the Jewish people. We're an egocentric bunch. You're going to say this justifies anti-Semitism? So be it. But that's how it is. This is one of the most fundamental principles of Torah. Everything in the world revolves around the Jewish people, or more specifically, revolved around the people who are justifying the purpose of the Jewish people. So yes, you were 100,000 people who are going to live a life, not much meaning, by dying, and by causing some more Yirat Shamayim to be developed in the world, suddenly their lives are full of meaning. A little bit harsh, but this is fundamental. The last point, the rest of the world is created to serve as a background or as company for this person, meaning they're there to provide him with his needs. Have you erased your mind? Really? The world is about him. The world is about those people who develop a relationship and awareness of Hashem. That's who the world is for. What are all the other people for? Well, you can't live in a world without plumbers. You can't live in a world without Chinese producing everything you own. And you can't live in a world without all kinds of other people, without a government to plan the streets, right? Infrastructure of the streets. That's how you have to view them. They're all just revolving around you. Sometimes you can't live in a world without some people to provide you with some adversity, right? Sometimes you need some anti-Semites to help you fulfill your purpose in life. But again, this is an egocentric view, but by having a problem with this egocentric view, it's actually having a problem with Hashem's purpose in the world. Hashem created the world for a purpose. Hashem didn't just create the world in order to sustain millions of Orientals or other people. I'm sorry. We have to realize this is about appreciating Hashem's purpose in the world. Hashem's purpose in the world was for those who are going to get to know Him. That's what the world is for. Everybody else is serving that person. That's also how we come back to the point that we said before. If a person thinks, very funny, look at the headlines. I wonder what I one time occurred. Basically, I follow news through the headlines. My knowledge of news is the headlines. It once occurred to me to put together the headlines of a whole year. What percentage of the headlines is what some nobody or the other said? How much is actually really significant events? Right? Most of the headlines is what somebody or the other said. And very little practical significance. Basically doesn't amount to much anyways. What's been going on the last couple of weeks? What are the most important events that have been going on lately? The nurses are on strike. That's day number one. The next day, the attempts to resolve the strike failed. The next day, right? The nurses are mad that the people at the ports got a higher salary than them. The next, this is what the world is all about. These are the headlines. Like we said before, the fact that a boy learned a little more Parshas Vayikra, okay, that's as far as the nurses goes. And when we're talking about every burp that someone in the Knesset made, then it is more important. What percentage of the headlines is all that stuff? There and there, there's a couple of significant pieces of news. That's what we're making, what the world is really about. That's the big news in the world. No. What's going on in our homes is the big news in the world. I have to get priorities straight. Yeah, so what are all the rest doing? What are all the politicians and all that doing? Investing a lot of talk into a little bit of actual outcome, which is really, really all meant just, again, to set the setting within in which we face our challenges in serving Hashem. Yirei Shamayim. True. You know what? Avraham Avinu. Well, whether he had the status of a Jew or not is an interesting discussion. We're allowed to assume that he didn't. It's true. The world was created for those who are going to come and recognize Hashem. You want to put it that way? The world was created for Avraham Avinu. Because Avraham Avinu did such a good job, his reward was that it was handed to the rest of his seed on a silver platter. But really, that's what we are. We're the people who have it handed to us on a silver platter, that now we can get to know Hashem and really fulfill the purpose of the world. You're right. A goy is the Yirei Shamayim. If he takes it all the way, he can join us. He has to realize that at the end of the day, because of Avraham Avinu's efforts, Hashem L'maisa threw all his weight into Avraham Avinu's seed. If a guy does not join us and he has Yirei Shamayim, he'll also have reward. We still won't call it the epitome, because the epitome are the people who are completely plugged into Hashem's will. And those are the people who are living with the Torah. But a guy who does realize what a guy should realize goes rewarded. Yes. Reuben is asking, what level of Yirei Shamayim are we talking about? The truth is that there is a very, very, very wide spectrum, obviously, of what Yirei Shamayim is. And this Gemara will be applicable accordingly. Meaning, yes, each person, the more Yirei Shamayim he develops, the more will define him as the central role of the world. It isn't an absolute. You got this degree, you got it. Yirei Shamayim is an endless career. Person can develop it for 100 years and for 1,000 years and keep enhancing it and enhancing it. Every level of Yirei Shamayim is a very, very valuable achievement. The Reuben is asking, could we say that guy, that professor, was the fulfillment of this concept? The answer is, it could be that yes, it could be that not. Let's take two professors. Two such professors, same story, okay? I'm going to copy this guy now. You can have, I'm going to say something strong now, It's actually an idea that Shimshon Pinkus says. You can have a person who was raised with the wrong background and was never really provided much spiritual opportunity. The one opportunity he was presented in life by Hashem was this opportunity. It provided a big challenge for him, and the question is, was he going to rise to the challenge? And by doing it, he might be one of the greatest people in the generation, even though objectively we certainly wouldn't define him that way. Because greatness is measured subjectively. At the end of the day, we don't know who are the people who have been the greatest achievers in our generation. Yes, we can have a person who's one of the greatest people in Olam Haba. From Hashem's perspective, each person is judged completely on his own level. How did you rise to the challenges that were presented to you? And that's all that counts. Sometimes a person is sent into this world to respond to one challenge, which can equal sometimes the efforts of a person who's been living from his whole life. So it's possible, and I'll take it even a step further. And this is a scary thing to say, but Rav Shimshon Pinkus says this idea, that sometimes the Rav, I don't want to say this about the Chafetz Chaim, but sometimes the Rav who gave that one drasha that did inspire him, the whole purpose of the Rav was L'tzeves L'zeh, to be that person's inspiration. Now this person has a whole lifetime of Torah study and of keeping mitzvahs, etc., etc. Yet, in the big scheme of things, this person utilizes opportunities 100%. Maybe that Rav, and this wasn't the case with Chafetz Chaim, but maybe that Rav was a person who, you know, he did his thing, he wasn't working too hard, he was gifted, he was set up in the right circumstances, he became a rabbi, he utilized 60% of his capabilities. Maybe this Rav's value in this world was being the one to inspire that person to do that one time of Seus Nefesh. In which case, yes, he might be a fulfillment of this concept. It's also possible that that same professor, no, he knew and he understood and he could have put his efforts in the right place. And he's telling himself, no, at least that I won't do. I won't renounce my Yiddishkeit. In that case, we'll say, he has a very low place on this spectrum. So the answer to your question really is very subjective. Because with all these things, lemais at the end of the day, it's subjective. It's not objective.
Right. He's been walking by the basement, she's walking to the basement.
You never know. That's right.
He learns another 30
only days. Hashem knows. Only Hashem knows. We know is there's one more person than Hashem who knows. The person himself knows to what extent he's utilizing his opportunities. Each of us has to be honest with ourselves, but as far as a story like that, knowing what is actually the significance of the story, Hashem knows based on that person's background. Okay, move on. Rebbe wasn't jealous of him. Avram is bringing in a pertinent Gemara. Remember Elazar ben Dodaya? He was the guy who spent his whole life doing Averis. At the end of his life, he was hit with such a hard regret that he put the last few moments of his life into intense tshuva. And Rebbe basically said, there, he fulfilled. They didn't put it that way. He said, Yesh kaina elamei b'sha'achas. He's earned his world to come in 1 hour, and he wept. Superficially, people take that to mean that Rebbe was jealous of him. Rebbe basically said, oh, turns out I could have... No, that's not the pshat in the Gemara. Rebbe was weeping for Elazar ben Dodaya. He said, look what a person can gain through 5 intense minutes. What if he would have used his 70 years that way? That's the lesson we should come away with. When you appreciate what could be gained in a couple of brief moments, look how rich you are by having a lot more than a couple of brief moments. Put some more intensity into your many moments. We don't appreciate the wealth that we have, the value of what a life of 20 to 150 years is worth. Okay.
Even if we're not like that professor in that one moment,
What's that?
Like his attention. Like if we don't, what if we don't have that moment like that professor? We're mostly successful. Let's say you're 70% or whatever the number is. We're still wealthy, or we have failure because we didn't do that one big, perhaps that one thing.
It isn't the yes or no question. The way Rav Shimshon Pinkus put it, I'm putting it in my words, time is an open check. Every moment of your life is an open check. So what happens if, meaning, you can make out of every moment of life anything from 10 cents to $1 billion. So what happens if a person comes up to Shamayim and he has $489 million? He's a failure of a success. He succeeded a lot. Maybe he could have succeeded more. It's very not yes or no. It's very gray. It's up to each of us to maximize as much as we can. But again, to realize, maybe hearing these things now is the opportunity that's being presented to us. The Rambam says, often a person is in a situation, a person who's from his whole life, suddenly gets a certain inspiration that is his opportunity in life. From here, you can take it. The point is, yeah, try to maximize every moment you have. Now, by the way, it's important to stress, part of maximizing every moment you have is knowing which moments to take it easy. If you maximize every moment, after 10, 20, 30, 40, or 1,000 of them, you'll go over the deep end. Part of the plan has to be a long-term plan. It has to be done in an honest way. Not led by your desire to chill out, but led by your desire to really enable yourself to maximize yourself. So yeah, maximize your time in as great a way as possible, not by 24 hours out of 24 hours, because after 3 days of not sleeping, you'll be done. But that's fine. Right? That's what Yaakov Kamenetsky used to say. The spaces in between the parshiyos and the Sefer Torah are kadosh also. After you finish a parsha in the Sefer Torah, you have to leave some white space. Now, that space it's wasted space. It's not wasted space. It's enabling the Sefer Torah to continue kasha. Because if you start the next parsha right away, it's no good. That space is kadosh. It's enabling the kashas of the Sefer Torah. You got to be honest with yourself. That's part of the challenge. And I'll add even a point that Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch said. When you're trying to be honest with yourself and maximizing yourself, when you have an honest topic, be makel. Meaning, if you're always going to be obsessing over, maybe I can do with 15 minutes less of sleep. I'm setting my alarm clock for maybe 15 minutes less of sleep, 15 minutes more of a little bit more learning. If you're going to live in that way, again, you'll send yourself over the deep end. Won't take long. That's part of the Yitzhara's trick. You have to allow yourself comfortable breathing space. Maximize it while giving yourself the comfortable breathing space that you need. But outside of that, maximize it intensely, 100%. Okay. We'll move on. Bama Bichelboy, Bama Avhunet. If you know about somebody that he usually greets you, tells you shalom, yaktim lo shalom. Try to beat him. Tell him shalom first. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, bakesh shalom verotzfeu. You have to seek out shalom and pursue it. So first of all, I just want to note something. Let's not translate shalom as hello. Shalom is a bracha, it's the name of Hashem. When you greet a person with Shalom Aleichem, you're benching him, you're giving him a bracha, which, by the way, Hashem says, Mevarachecha Baruch, by benching a Jew, you're earning blessing. It's good to get accustomed to saying Shalom Aleichem. What's Shalom? Shalom is the name of Hashem, which actually denotes the word Shalom, but translated as peace. Peace is a very, very broad and general way of defining shalom. Shalom really means when everything is running exactly right, which really depends on Hashem being Meir Panim, right? That's how you see the term in Sim Shalom. Hashem turns towards you and focuses on you and smiles upon you, so to speak. Hashem smiles, that brings bracha. That sets everything right. Shalom means, peace really means harmony. Everything running right. That's what shalom means. It's expressed. You say it by, may Hashem be upon you. That's what he's saying when he's saying shalom aleichem. May Hashem be upon you. The more Hashem is with you, the more everything is in place. That's Shalom. To say Shalom Aleichem, that element of Hashem's name, may that be upon you. And yeah, our whole purpose in this world is to be enhancing Shalom. That's what it's all about. That's what all the mitzvahs are about. Everything running right. And of course, a very important part of that is we call peace. Right? Peace between people. We're meant to be trying to enhance that all the time, pursuing it. And therefore, yes, if a person always greets you with Shalom, a person always greets you now, I'll just say, even if it's just a hello, saying hello with a smile is an element of Shalom. But you can do more by actually saying Shalom Aleichem. But saying hello with a smile is setting things today in this person's life a little more right, as we'll see soon. It's a better feeling in the street. It's a better feeling around you. That's enhancing the general state of things. So we're meant to always be pursuing Shalom, enhancing Shalom. If you know that this person always greets you, take it to the next level. Beat him to it. You're taking the Shalom to even a bigger level. When you have people who are always trying to beat each other in saying Shalom, take the Shalom a step up. Again, it could be fulfilled with a nice hello also. It's important to know that. But Shalom Aleichem has an especial significance. It's mamish bestowing Hashem's name upon another person.
What about just Shalom?
Shalom? That too? Now, Shalom Aleichem as opposed to Shalom? I don't know. Now, v'im nosan loy v'loy echzir. And now the Gemara says, if someone did greet you and you did not return it, you didn't respond, nikra gazlan, you're a gazlan, a robber. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, v'atem bi'artem hakeren, you have been destroying the vineyard. Klal Yisrael is called a vineyard. Zela se'ani bevateichem, the stolen goods of the poor people are in your home. That's the pashat pshat in the pasuk. Aware, understanding this is referring to not answering a person when he tells you Shalom. How does that connect to a poor person? So Rashi says what it means is you have a poor person who has nothing to his name. You can't help him much. The one thing he could have is at least that good feeling, and you're robbing even that. But many of the other mafarshim simply say that ani here doesn't mean a poor person. It's from the term oine, ania, responding. By not responding, when someone greets you, you're a gazlan. Now let's just understand that. It's not just a form of speech. Like the in Slabodka they used to say, a sour face on the street is a bar birshus harabim. It's like building a pit in the street. It's a bar birshus harabim. You walk by a person and he greets you with a smile, it gives a good feeling. You might underestimate the value of how far that can go. Person meets you in the street, a big smile, he sees that you're happy to see him, it starts his day off right. These are subtle things, but these are things that can really impact the person's day. And if it can impact the person's day, it can impact the person's life. Now Hashem created the world such that we're a society. We're a society. And someone walks by you, and you just give him a snobby little look as he walks by and greets you, you gave him a lousy feeling. That's a barbu shusarabin, because he's a pit in the street. You started his day wrong. He might go away with a lousy feeling. He'll come home and be grouchy to his wife as a result. You'll sometimes be surprised to know what the ripple effects can be. Therefore, you have to realize that when Hashem creates a society of different people interacting with each other, each person owes it to the other to make things as pleasant as possible for the people around him. We're all working together to create a pleasant atmosphere for all of us. And therefore, yes, if a person doesn't return the shalom, you are robbing him of what's coming to him. Hashem put him in your society, that means that you owe it to him to help make his existence more pleasant. And if not, a person is called a gazlan. This is what the Gemara is telling us. Alright? That'll be that for today.